What's up, D-Fam? Welcome back to the greatest Houston-based podcast in the world, the Weekly D-Podcast. I'm your host, Danny G, and today we got a very special guest. He's a rapper, but way more than that, so today I'm just going to call him the boss man. Please allow me to introduce y'all to Mr. Knox Bond.
Yeah, what's up, Houston, H-Town? You know, we here. You know, I did a couple shows in Houston. Shout out Dogecoin. Shout out Super Unit. You know what I'm saying? I did the Webby show out there. Shout out Bar Louie. Y'all kicked me out for beating up your waiter.
I love that, man, because I've been kicked out of Bar Louie too.
Oh, yeah, that's lit. That's lit, man. Yeah, I got in a whole situation out there, man. It was great.
Oh, man.
The whole bar tried to fight me.
Damn. I never had a whole bar try to fight me, but
I've been kicked out. Man, I've had it happen a couple times down there. It was like, I don't know, man. This waiter kind of instigated a fight. And he was a lot bigger than me, and he was just kind of like grilling me and just looking at me, and like he was just like kind of like, and I was in a bad mood anyway, so I started treating him every time I saw him. I was like, "You bitch ass motherfucker, hoe ass motherfucker, what you looking at?" You know what I mean? Like I really started treating him, and then at one point in time, he really got mad, and I was like, "You a bitch, you ain't finna do shit." And he was like, "You don't know me, you can't tell me I ain't gonna do shit." I'm like, "You ain't gonna do shit." He picked up a fucking plate with spaghetti in it and like lunged at my face and tried to hit me in the face with it. I punched right through that bitch and hit him in the face and knocked his ass back 3 feet. Man, the whole fucking bar jumped up and had his back, bro. Next thing I know, I got fucking 8 cowboys jumping up. You know what I mean? And they're all like, ah. And so I'm like, man, fuck it. Who's next? You know what I mean? And then the police showed up.
Sounds about right. Especially at Bar Louie, man. They're quick to show up.
I don't know how the fuck the cops got there that quick, man. The cops were there. Like,
there's literally a police station right down the street from there.
That makes
sense. The corner and it's there.
That makes sense because, I mean, they showed up fast. And then people thought it was crazy as fuck because I was told from the outside perspective. It was me instigating the fight, beating up the waiter, trying to fight the entire fucking bar. The police come up. I talk to them, shake their hand, and walk away. So everybody's over here like, what the fuck?
Oh, man.
Like, my people came up to me and tried to get the keys while I was talking to the police. You know what I'm saying? They're like, hey, man, give me the keys so we can all leave. You know what I mean? And I'm like, hey, get the fuck out of my face. What the fuck are you talking about? Bitch, I'm leaving. You don't see no motherfucking handcuffs.
God damn. That's a crazy ass story, man. I wish I would have gone. See, I wanted to go the night that y'all came down here for Dogepalooza, but I had prior commitments and I was like, man, I can't make it to the bar.
You like, I was wish you would have gone. Everybody who was there wished they would have stayed home.
I would have been down,
dude. It's entertaining. It's entertaining in retrospect, but you know, the thing is that most of the gangsters are dead and in prison. So nobody's really seen gangsta shit. And I've had gangsta shit happen in every city that I've been to. Like in St. Louis. Oh, let me tell you this one. This shit was funny as fuck. All right. So I'm sitting there with a group of motherfucking thug-ass motherfuckers from The Appearance. I'm the smallest one there. You know what I mean? And we're having a conversation, but I'm with my bros. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying myself. I bought this fucking 5-star hotel, put $1,000 in this bitch-ass hotel's pocket. So I'm at the bar, chilling, having fun with my guys, feeding everybody. You know what I'm saying? And this fucking jackass over at the next table, he comes over and he goes, hey, can you guys lower your voice? And I'm like, bro, do you want to leave this bitch in a hospital? What the fuck are you doing? Shut the fuck up. Get the fuck out of our face. Who do you think you are? My guys are like, man, we're sorry, bro. We're sorry. He's crazy. You know what I'm saying? This motherfucker get up to leave and a fucking walk back up to our table. He's like, I'm sorry, man. I ordered a bottle. So, you know, y'all are going to get a bottle here shortly. And then dip the fuck out. It was funny.
He caught that. He knew real quick not to fuck.
He's like, hey.
See, I that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, because So I always hear people ask you, like, what's it like to be a white rapper? Because everyone likes to throw that card, right? A white rapper, white rapper. But my biggest thing is, like, how many times do you get tested? Because I feel like there's a little bit of disrespect sometimes when you're a white rapper and people want to test you and really test your gangster. But even though we know a lot of people in the music industry, they're artists, you know?
So
Tupac was a drama club kid.
It's fact, man. And there's not a whole lot of real... See, the thing is, the difference is I'm not like that sense of an artist. I'm really a dangerous psychopath. I have been my whole fucking life. I've been getting into violent altercations my whole life. I've been fighting with my brother my whole life. Mm-hmm. If I beat my brother's ass, you better believe I beat your ass, man. You know what I mean? Like it's real. But so in answer to your question, only once. Mm-hmm. They only try me once. But it happens often, yeah. And it's fun for me. I love it. I have people that fucking plead for mercy. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm fucking sorry. Please. Can we please just let it go? No, yeah. Bitch. Fuck you. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, man. So some people, anybody who's outside of the network and they don't know me,
mm-hmm.
and they look at me, and the first, like, they look and they're just, oh, this is a scrawny white dude with glasses and long hair. I'm finna punk him and take his girlfriend. And then they're on the ground bleeding. And so it's like, I'm like, bro, why did you do that? I was fucking stupid. You know, because the thing is that personally with me, it's not up to chance. I'm like, you know, I got everything I need for my black belt. So, so like, you know, I practice Jeet Kune Do and beat big people up for fun. So it's like, they try me and then they realize that they fucked up like badly. Some people actually have to go through delegation. Like there are people who have a job of, you fucked up and you now need Knox Bond's forgiveness, but you can't speak to Knox Bond correctly. You got to contact Trill Will or you got to contact payroll because those are the diplomats who can speak on your behalf and who can make your dumbass words respectful. So a lot of people, they can't have direct contact with me. I don't want to talk to them on the phone. I don't want to speak to them in person. Like in person, if you walk up to me, like you're probably going to have to speak to Trill Will. He's probably going to have to be like, okay, he said it's okay for you to talk to him. Because 9 times out of 10, if you walk up to me and you disrespect me, I'm going to have a problem with it. And you're not going to be able to de-escalate it. Because the way I feel about war is that once you make a declaration of war, you no longer have a say in the matter.
Gotcha.
You don't get to decide where it goes. You don't get to punch me and then say, I can't shoot you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you punch me, I have every right to shoot you in your face. I don't have to, respond to you punching me by me punching you. I don't want to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense.
I think I'm much too aggressive for people to try. People typically try me online and then they do it one time and then they meet in real life and they turn into Ricky and then they meet me and they fucking evacuate the city and pack in a hurry.
They're like deuces.
I called him on the phone and he didn't know it was me. And he was so fucking scared. I'm on the train right now. I'm on the train. I'm leaving the city right now. I ain't coming back.
Yeah.
It was so, he thought I was his bro. I was like, bitch, good. What the fuck are you talking about, bro? You fucking pussy ass. He's like, oh my God, who is this? It was.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense though. And that makes sense why you're successful in what you are, right? Because it takes an aggressive person to make it in this industry, especially in the music.
Well, it's a shark tank. Yeah. It's a shark tank. If I was soft, they would have been ate me up, chewed me out, spit me out, took advantage of me, blackballed me, intimidated me, shook me down, probably extorted me, took money from me. If I was soft, man, they would have done motherfucking just, you know what I mean? I'm not soft. I'm hard. I do that to them.
Yeah, oh, I believe it. I believe it. I mean, and like I said, that's what it takes to be a boss, right? Especially in this industry, which...
And that's, you know, not a lot of people are bosses. I was speaking to, you know, one of the highest, an SGIG 33rd degree Supreme Council member of the Scottish Rite. He told me, everybody got a boss, man. I said, nope, not me. I ain't got no boss. I ain't got no motherfucking boss. I ain't got nobody who can tell me what to do. I ain't got nobody who can tell me what time to wake up or where to be or when to be there or chastise me for what I did or didn't do. Fuck that shit. But I can do it to a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's what makes me the boss.
Yes, sir.
I've cut a check for $35,000 and said, here you go, employee. Like, motherfuckers use the word boss. Oh, I'm a boss. I'm a boss because I'm a boss because I have money. Bitch, you ain't a boss. Nobody worked for you.
There you go. I like that you said that.
Nobody worked for you. You're not a boss if nobody worked for you. Bosses work for me. Yes. Bosses work for me. Like motherfucking certified, known, legendary bosses work for me. I'm a motherfucking boss.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it's true, right? A lot of people say, oh, I'm the boss, I'm this, I'm that, but they ain't got nobody under them, they ain't signing checks, and if they are, they ain't big checks, right? Which brings me to like, my next question is, how did you get into the music industry? Because, like, you're in it, but I've heard you say you're creating your own industry at this point.
Yeah, I had to create my own industry because the industry sucks. The culture's shit. The fucking entire system is rigged. It's bullshit. Nobody's really a fucking celebrity. It's not good enough for me.
Yeah.
It's not fucking good enough for me. That's, yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. I really want a level of a platform of a fucking following of people. I don't give a fuck about numbers. I don't care about Spotify numbers. And I did that. I did that to prove a point. Oh, you're supposed to have a million streams. Okay, I got a million streams in 41 days. Fuck you. Now what? So, in answer to your question, I got into the music industry very organically.
Okay.
It was a very automatic process of an intelligent person who is logical and reasonable, figuring out the next steps and also being given advice from multiple people who are now known as legends because they're no longer with us. They're dead. And a fact that these people are a part of my journey is history itself speaking to the masses and to the audience saying, hey, listen, Nipsey Hussle can't stamp nobody else. Nipsey Hussle can't tell anybody else the key is to be sustainable. He told Knox Bond. And Knox Bond is out there spreading the message from Nipsey Hussle's mouth that the key is to be sustainable and to do everything in-house. P&B Rock can't tell anybody else that the goal is it doesn't matter how well you can rap, it's how well you can make a song. P&B Rock told me that. And that is history telling people that I am great. I am among greatness, and greatness recognizes me. The greatness that is no longer here, when it was here, saluted and respected me. And these conversations are all recorded. This is history. This is all on record. Everything happened organically.
Okay.
There was no internet as far as today's iteration of the internet. It didn't exist. There was no social media stars. There was no social media influencers. That wasn't a thing. There was no streaming. None of it. This was in the early 90s.
Okay, all so right? CDs, mixtapes.
CDs and mixtapes.
Yep.
All right.
Plus there.
So when I started, it was on street corners and ciphers.
Okay.
It was looking at my brother, Lucchese, and the people around us freestyling in ciphers. there was a transitional period where I hated rap. Couldn't stand it. I was a skateboarder. Mm-hmm. I didn't listen to rap music. Me and my brother got into fist fights over him wanting to listen to Do or Die and mm-hmm. me wanting to listen to Misfits. I was a fan of Nirvana and rock and roll and alternative mm-hmm. music. And then there was a turning point. And the turning point was poetry. When I started writing poetry, the poetry had a natural rhythm, and I stepped into the ciphers.
Gotcha.
When I stepped into the ciphers, I quickly noticed that people took notice. And I was just freestyling my poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, whoa! Like, whoa, you can rap! So then it was, again, a natural step uh-huh. to record it.
Okay.
So I recorded it on a karaoke machine at home.
Nice.
And, I mean, it was as ghetto as you can get, man. This mm-hmm. is what I try to tell people, find a way, make a way. Listen, I didn't have a studio.
Yeah.
What I did is I took a Radio Shack $20 microphone, and I put it up to the $20 Radio Shack speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I played MIDI beats on the microphone and recorded it onto one tape. And then I flipped that over to another tape and I recorded my vocals over it. And it was the most horrible quality you will ever hear out of anything. I recorded my first joint on a karaoke machine. Mm-hmm. And then I went outside where I lived and I printed it up. And I mm-hmm. passed out probably 20, 30 copies to the local kids
mm-hmm.
that were around. I just kept making copies of the same tape. Mm-hmm. Now that I had the tape, I just kept printing up the same tape. One of the kids who I gave him the tape, he gave it to his mom.
Mm-hmm.
His mom took it into a studio mm-hmm. and they heard it. So this guy calls me, Clayton Roswell, and he invites me out to the studio.
Okay.
So I go to the studio, they test me, I rap, and now I have free studio time. So now I'm in there and I'm recording, but as mm-hmm. I'm recording, I'm also helping other people. I'm helping the producers produce, I'm helping the singers come up with the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with the other artists. I'm putting the producers on the beats, and I'm working with the singers that are in the studio to collaborate with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I help Clayton develop a magazine, and I help him build his studio and build a club. And we do like an open mic type thing in the club where it's a mm-hmm. battle. And okay. then he puts me in the battle. And this is kind of how I made a name for myself the first mm-hmm. night. In Wichita, Kansas, on 21st and Hillside at the club with Clayton Roswell and the Lab Magazine. And because, again, this is history. So there's times, dates, you know, witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
I went in and I battled. Okay. And it was a winner takes on the next person scenario.
Okay.
And I never lost and I beat the whole city.
Damn.
And they were chanting my name.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Knox, 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 like it was like something out of a movie.
How did that feel like to get to that point, like where you're winning and people are just cheering your name? Because this is like the first time you're battling, right?
This is like the first time. Well, I mean, I'm used to it because in the ciphers, I destroyed rappers
mm-hmm.
because of my history in learning poetry and learning the actual grammar and metaphors and similes before mm-hmm. I was a published poet before I ever wrote a rap song.
Really?
Yeah. Holy like published shit. In three different yeah. books. So like before I ever wrote, I was a published poet when I was 10 years old.
Damn.
So you know what I'm saying? Like, so mm-hmm. I was already published. I was already writing poetry and the poetry was getting published and I was developing mm-hmm. a fan base and people were understanding who I was. And then when I went into the ciphers, it wasn't normal. I was the killer in the cipher. I was destroying everybody. If anybody mm-hmm. wanted to battle, I would battle him. If it was 9 times out of 10, I would start rapping And then people would battle me without me even asking to battle. They would just insult me and disrespect me. And I would have no choice but to come back and disrespect them because that's just how I'm built. So 9 times out of 10, the ciphers would turn into battles. Mm-hmm. And so I was already built for that. So by the time that I, you know, I was on the stage and I was battling, I was seasoned. So I was destroying people, and it was left and right. And nobody else was a seasoned battler. Nobody knew what they were doing. Everybody was playing. I was a real, like, recording artist. You know what I'm saying? Seasoned. Because at this point, I had already, like, had part ownership in a studio. So I had free studio time. I was in and out of that studio every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, the first singer that I helped develop, her name was Heather, and I helped her write songs. So it felt very natural. There was never a sense of, oh, this is amazing. It was supposed to happen. Yeah. Everything that happened was supposed to happen. Yeah. And so it kept elevating. You know what I'm saying? Like, from there, okay, now I'm a rapper. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a recording artist. Mm-hmm. And now I'm known. I got an image. I got a magazine. I have an advertising company. Therefore, I have money. And the reputation itself is what grew. Gotcha. So it wasn't about the music. It was about the reputation. Mm-hmm. I was somebody who had just off gate. I had power. I had a magazine. I could put you in that magazine. It was called The Hot Sheets. I had a studio. I had producers. I could bring you into the studio and record you for free. And nobody would charge you for studio time or for the production or to get on the stage and perform. So right out the gate, I had power. Uh-huh. I had the ability to help other people. What's the first thing I do? I turn to my brother, my blood brother, and I teach him everything I know. I teach him, this is what we do in the studio. This is how we rap. We keep it real. We don't do anything fake. We rap about our lives. This is how you do multi-syllable. Now, my brother, he was already amazing. He was, because he listened to rap before me, but he has this same brain because it's the same DNA. So he knew how to rap. He just didn't know the business side of things and the technical specifics. And so I taught him everything I know, both by teaching him and then by leading by example our whole life. Right. Okay. Which means that having a record label was natural. Yeah. It was not to make money. It was not like these other guys developed. It was to help my brother. And so it was almost non-commercial. It wasn't to make money. It was to develop my brother because he didn't know anything about the music industry. So I wanted to create a platform where my brother can have the same benefits because he's my brother. He's my blood brother. There was a point in time where he saved my life with a pistol to my face. And he took a bullet, and his arm doesn't move now. So, so like, I'm going to take care of him for the rest of my life. He's good. You know what I mean? He's got a job. He's got a house. He's able to get around. He's able to be in the music industry. You know, we put him on records. We do music video. I sent him to Detroit to do a record with Geno Cash. You know, came to Atlanta to do a record with PBE Pluto. The record that he has with PB Pluto right now has 222,000 streams organically. So he is an artist that I am breaking the hard way from the ground up with an organic fan base, and it's my brother. So it's working. My brother has 222,000 streams on a song with PB Pluto. Nobody promoted that song. Nobody put a dollar, because our company policy is we don't spend money on promotion or marketing. So. Okay. You know, I haven't spent money on promotion and marketing in a good 3.5, 4 years, maybe 5. And so everything that happens is organic. And I'm able to, you know, kind of go to the next level. What's the next level? Okay, now I have a record label. I've got a studio. I can record music. I've got a magazine. I can distribute music. So what's next? Now, at this time, 50 Cent was popping. Okay. And 50 Cent's original joint was mixtapes. Yep. So 50 Cent was popping off of mixtapes. So logical conclusion, you got to get on mixtapes. So how can I penetrate the mixtape industry when there's 1,000 mixtapes that come out a day? Well, I'm going to have to get on a big mixtape. I'm not going to have to get on a regular mixtape. So the first thing that I did to really penetrate the industry, right? Because now I've already penetrated the local market, developed a reputation. I'm known for having power, money, females, and being the best rapper on any block. Okay. Yeah. So that's the reputation. Right now at this point, I'm also nice. There's no martial arts. There's no capitalism. There's no concern with making money. I'm nice. I'm not misogynistic. I mean, I'm young. I'm naive. I'm fucking nice. I'm a pleasant guy. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the same personality as Knox Bond, the asshole, the boss, the motherfucking you don't speak to me with your mouth open. Not that guy, right? Yeah. Whole different guy. Happy, nice, friendly. How can I help you? What can I do for you? Yeah, let's go. I'm going to be a super celebrity next year. You know what I mean? All the hope, all the... So I said, okay, Paul Wall is coming out with a big record. It was called I'm Throwed. It had Jermaine Dupri on it. It was everywhere, man. Every fucking where you looked, you heard I'm Throwed.
Yeah, I remember it.
A DJ that I knew, DJ A Million, put together his mixtape for I'm Throwed. He put me as track number 5. So on the whole mixtape, it's Paul Wall and then me. So I'm the first artist aside from Paul Wall, and it was my first stamp because it literally said, "Yo, this is Paul Wall, the People's Champ. You are listening to Knox Bond on the I'm Throwed mixtape." So it was literally my first stamp, like Paul Wall literally dupe stamp dupe Knox Bond, and then threw him on the CD. See what I'm saying? So it wasn't normal. I wasn't just. It was like right off gate. There was a lot of eyes on me. I had Paul Wall's fan base that was like, okay, this dude could rap. And the people were respecting it because they put me number 5. Now, this shit had Jeezy on it. It had everybody on it. I was number 5. And the only person before me was Paul Wall. Now, at that point in time, I bought my way onto a bunch of mixtapes.
Bought mixtapes.
Now, at the same time, as an artist, I'm developing because I started working with industry producers. And that was very natural. I went to a studio. The studio was closed. I met somebody outside. We clicked. Hung out. He showed me he had a couple records with Mike Jones. And he told me he charges $5,000 a record. I'll never work with you. Cool. Nice to meet you. Have a wonderful day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A couple weeks later, I'm driving down the road, my little Monte Carlo. This same guy broke down in his car, and he's on the side of the road. So I picked him up, and I took him where he needed to go, which was the studio. Hung out there all night, had a party, entertained his fans, and left with a few beats. So now I've got an industry producer that's feeding me beats, which is and that's always been the standard. So, but this is where it was set. Way back in 2008, you know what I mean? This because there was a 8-year development period from 2000 to 2008 where I sucked, and I did not have good quality instrumentals. I did not have good quality studio quality. I wasn't using multi-syllabic rhyme schemes. I was saying punchlines. But I didn't have none of this shit that I have. There was an 8-year development period where I had to go through and learn. So, end of the 8-year period, I'm out here with Mike Jones' producer's beats and Nicki Minaj's producer's beats and Travis Porter's producer's beats.
Damn.
So now I'm making industry quality material in an industry studio. It's sustainable. I don't have to pay for it, but I have to pay to get on mixtapes.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, I'm out there selling CDs hand to hand everywhere.
Man,
I'm talking about everywhere. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I read somewhere that Eminem sold 1,000 CDs out of his trunk. So I made it my goal, and it was a successful goal to sell 10 times that. So I sold 10,000 CDs out of my trunk. So I popped up at convenience stores, gas stations, Walmarts, and like I didn't have a job for 3 years. I just sold CDs. And then from there, it was a very natural step to build a street team and have five other people with me when we were out there selling CDs and have them wearing shirts that were identical so that we could identify each other and other people could identify. So it was very natural. It was okay. It's time to do this. So now I've got a street team selling CDs, flooding the market. I'm like, okay, but how can I penetrate? And I've got the mixtapes I'm purchasing, right? So how can I penetrate the rest of the world? So then I got on MySpace. And with MySpace, they used to have a different algorithm. And with MySpace's algorithm, you used to be able to program a song for autoplay and post it on anybody's page. So I just created a little script, a little JavaScript. You know, I was a little script kiddie. So I did the JavaScript code, and then I would go to people like 50 Cent's page, and I would post my song on the very top of his page so that if 50 Cent got 50,000 viewers in a day, I got 50,000 plays, which triggered the algorithm and put it in front of other people. So I very quickly got 500,000 plays on MySpace and developed thousands of followers on MySpace and had artists from Philadelphia to New York to Canada hitting me up saying, let's do a record. And then I did records with them and I penetrated other markets. I did a record with Littles the General and penetrated Toronto. I did a record with Grunge and penetrated Philly. Yeah. I did a record with Lucci and penetrated Harlem. And so I'm sitting here and now there's like a method that's going on. Yeah. I'm not just rapping. You see what I'm saying? I'm building an empire already. So then I go and I look back over here. Now I got popularity. I'm popular on MySpace. So if somebody goes and looks me up, they see that I have 5,000 plays. I can record music for free. I got industry production. I got a magazine. I'm doing everything right. But I can't keep paying for these mixtapes. I only make 40 grand a year at this point. Not super rich. And these mixtapes are 100 bucks to 500 bucks a pop. So I brainstorm. How can I get on mixtapes without paying for it? And just it, I can create a DJ coalition. DJs,
yeah.
I can do something else for the DJs. And then they'll offer to put me on mixtapes. I know they will. So then I basically just made a website, made a flyer, made a bunch of flyers for people, put a bunch of DJs in touch with other DJs and kind of like created a system to where everybody could communicate with each other. That was the first iteration of Next Level. It was only 30 DJs, but every single one of them were active. And what happened is I quickly got put on 100 mixtapes. So now I'm flooding all markets. I'm flooding the mixtape market. I'm flooding the streets. Yeah. I'm flooding the internet. I'm putting out mixtapes myself on DatPiff, I think was originally the one. I'm putting my family on. I'm recording my family for free. I met the people my brother met, and they became my new family. I'm putting them on. I'm teaching them everything I know. So it was automatically I'm the big homie. Automatically. I'm not. It's like I don't have the money, and people are smoking their weed with me. So I'm not the big homie in the sense that I'm the guy smoking his weed with everybody. People are smoking their weed with me as I'm teaching them and helping them and giving them free studio time. So even though they have more money, more of a position, automatically, I'm the big homie. I'm the one that everybody knows I'm going to make something happen.
Like, you're putting fuck them on game
being in point. The streets.
Yeah.
We're going to do something, and it's going to be based on Knox Bond. So then I had to figure out, how the fuck am I going to penetrate radio? Radio is a whole other ballgame.
Yeah.
And so I did a record that was very commercial with a friend of mine named Mirage the R&B Beast and Jamie Foxx.
Nice.
So, and it was produced by Rafael Sadiq from Tony. Mm-hmm. So it was like automatically all boxes are checkmarked. It's produced by Raphael Sadiq, written by Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Yeah.
So we did a, they did a contest for Media Base. They did the top 100 songs for an independent artist on Media Base. And I won. Damn. First place. You know what I mean? I won that contest. Yeah. So I got my acknowledgement. Now I'm on the radio. Now I'm getting radio play.
Dude, it's dope.
And there you go. Yeah. Now my whole network was built, and all I had to do was scale up.
Yeah, dude, that is an amazing story on how you just leveled up. I see why you called it next level, because that's you constantly taking that next level, taking that
next level. What's next?
That's amazing, though.
Yeah, because I'm never complacent. It's never good enough. Like I'm on 18 radio stations myself as the DJ. Dude, I'm mixing three, four of my songs, two of my brother's songs, and one of each of my artists from the labels that I own, and putting us all on 18 radio stations every week without having to go through anybody.
That is crazy. Because I know radio plays like hard to get to, right?
I got it.
Yeah.
Dude, I got it. And I ain't got to ask nobody, and I ain't got to pay nobody.
Yeah.
And I'm on 18 radio stations every single week. Nope, I apologize. I'm on 19 radio stations. Shout out to 90.9 FM in Philly. They just picked us up. So, yeah, FM, bro. These are real. Like, we on a whole bunch of FM radio stations in a whole bunch of markets. And, like, as you can see in my interviews, right, I'm in Atlanta. You're in Houston. Your fan base is in Houston. They're going to fucking love me because real recognize, real always have, always will. Yeah, they're going to be like, who is this gangster ass motherfucking boss ass take over the whole industry and he's not capping? Like, what the fuck? And so now we locked in even more with Houston. We already locked in with Houston. I fuck with Houston. I toured with Webby in Houston. I toured with Dogecoin in Houston. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole concept is it's not a city. Yeah. It's the world. I want every city, every state, every country. I want all of it. I want every market, and I want every record breaker to be under my umbrella.
Bro, that's an amazing goal to have. And, I mean, just seeing you take step from step, hearing your story, like, I could see that happening. You have
– it's happening. Like,
what motivates you to keep going, though, at that point? Is it the fact that you want your name – known worldwide and you want the next level brand and Knox Bond's brand?
No, you are asking the dope questions, man. You're asking the right questions and you're asking the deep questions because I'm built to not lie. Mm-hmm. So when you ask questions, you're actually going to get honest answers. I hate this shit. I work for God.
Mm-hmm.
He directs my path. This is the shit I gotta do.
Gotcha. That's what it is.
That's what it is. It's not something I enjoy.
Yeah.
Not something I do for fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's because this whole industry's fucked.
I believe that.
This whole industry's crooked, twisted, and corrupt. And it has to be fixed from the inside out. And there's nobody who can or will do it. So it's been given to me.
Damn. It's a crazy weight to hold on your shoulders there.
I don't think it's any weight. No. You know, because I work for God, so he works for me. So if God needs me to do something, then, you know, he tells me what to do, and I do it. And if I need God to do something, then I ask it, I request it. Just like the Bible says, it's done.
Mm-hmm. That's perfectly said. It's beautiful. Biblical.
it's very biblical. My genealogy is biblical. There is a YouTube video that says I traced my genealogy 127 generations to Adam. It's not cap. I went through and I looked at who my father and his father and his father and his father is. Every single one of my grandfathers were kings. They were all royalty. They were all kings of Ireland or Scotland or Persia or Goth or, and it goes all the way back to Moses was like my 109th grandfather. Noah was like my 100-something grandfather. And it's not made up, and it's not something that I did. I just plugged my information into genie.com, and the only information that I had was my name, my father's name, and my grandfather's name. But the people that we're connected to, they're famous, so people have already done their genealogy. So as soon as I plugged in the information of who I was, my father and my grandfather, it connected all the dots and said, congratulations, Moses is your fucking 109th grandfather. I'm just as surprised as everybody else, all right?
Damn. That's wild.
I'm just as – I've had people that literally stop being my friend because genie.com says Jesus is my third cousin 10 times removed. And now they got mad at that because of the implications that it holds because of my skin color. Hey, listen, man. I didn't fucking program genie.com. I didn't fucking pick my dad or my grandpa. And I didn't fucking put anything else in there. So I don't know what the fuck to tell you, man. It is what it is. Jesus is my third cousin, 10 times removed. It's a fact. You can go to genie.com. My fucking family tree is public history. How wild is that, though?
That's fucking crazy.
I've never heard of anything even resembling it in my entire life. Yeah. Never. I was so shocked.
What made you want to trace that down? Because that's an interesting find, but something had to click in your head where you're like, I want to know where it started from, right?
Something clicked in my head that said, I want to know where it started from. And when it clicked, I went deep.
Yeah. Yeah, I could tell. I mean, to have traced it back down that far, you definitely did a deep dive.
And yeah, I had to just keep going. I had to change I had to change genie.com.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Because none of the biblical figures, nobody could connect to. Nobody could go to Moses' page and hit that they were connected because they were so-called biblical figures. And none of them had a genealogy that connected the current bloodlines, including royalty. There are no living members that have the bloodline of that royal bloodline, present company excluded. So basically, there was one character that prevented the Bible from connecting to the rest of the world. That character's name was Nile of the Nine Tails. He's like my 54th or like 85th grandfather or some shit like that. Now, the problem is, and this is what I presented to genie.com with my genealogy. Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're still good.
Okay. The problem is that if Niles of the Nine doesn't exist, neither do I.
Yeah.
That's a real problem.
Yeah.
He is no longer a fictional character because I am here to prove that is personally my fucking 85th grandfather. And if Nile of the Nine doesn't exist, my whole family tree's gone. So explain that, fellas.
Damn.
So their problem was that Nile of the Nine had a crazy age. The Bible tells us that people used to live to an older age. And that slowly their age decreased over time. And that was the only conflict. So because my family tree literally connected to Nile of the Nine, and because of that, if Nile of the Nine doesn't exist, I don't exist, genie.com was forced to list Nile of the Nine as a regular person. In doing so, it unlocked the biblical lock that had blocked everybody from connecting to any biblical characters. I did that. I changed it on genie.com from where people could not connect to biblical characters to where they can connect to biblical characters. This shit is real.
That's crazy.
And guess what? In order to do that, there's a whole paper trail of my conversation, which was public on the genie boards with the administration, making them change their rules.
Wow.
It's all on record, bro. It's all on record, every step. That's everything. Crazy. Because again, this is history telling the masses this is real. This is not a joke, a game, or a gimmick. And when I say that my intention is to take over, understand that's what kings do. We conquer. We take over territories. I've chosen the music industry as my territory, and thus I will take it over.
So to you at this point, it's destiny. You're going to do it. It's your path. It's your almost prophecy to do this, destroy but take over the music industry and restructure it to be what it should be rather than the corruption that it truly is at this point.
It's my only drive, man. I don't have kids. I don't have a wife. I don't have shit. I sacrificed my whole fucking life for this. I just fuck models. Mm-hmm. I don't even want a girlfriend. Last girlfriend I had over here was crazy as fuck, man. I ain't got no time for that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, bro. Just real shit, bro. Like, I'm here for a purpose. My purpose is bigger than most people. And it's a drive. And it's a fierce drive. And there is aggression and anger and violence willing to back up this drive. This is not... I look at it like my cousin was nice, man. And y'all motherfuckers nailed him to a cross. We ain't on that shit, bro. We'll shoot your ass, bro. Fuck that shit.
Pull out the samurai sword if you have to, huh?
You know what I mean? If I was with Jesus, that shit wouldn't have went down.
Yeah, I believe
he would have been like, no, it's okay. It's for dad. We got. I would have been like, nah, fuck all that shit, man. Nah, pick your sword back up. Cut his other ear off.
Yeah. I believe it, man. I believe it.
But he had to pay that price because now sin is forgiven.
Yeah.
Now sin is forgiven. So that's a big deal because we couldn't have paid it ourselves. We sinful motherfuckers, man. We sin every day. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, cuzzo paid the price. Sin's forgiven. Yeah. But we ain't being nice no more. We righteous, but we're violently righteous.
Yeah, I like that. I like the way you put that. The way you literally put it, verbalized it. You know, violent but righteous. Perfectly said, man. That's crazy. And I mean, so I've been following your social media, your Instagram, your TikTok. And I see that you love doing deep dives. You love conspiracies. How did that start? Was it when you started looking down your family history, or was it something that you were always interested in?
Yes, always, man. I dropped out in eighth grade, okay. So I've never been through the public high school system. What I did instead is while everybody was at school and working and I was at home, I read. Mm-hmm. And I read and I read and I read and I read. I read everything there was to read.
Yeah.
I read everything from fiction books, from documentary type stuff, mm-hmm. biographies, history. To where it actually became a hobby.
Okay.
To this day, I read. I love to read. I love to learn. Mm-hmm. I love to absorb new information and know things. And so that's always been there. I've always had a thirst to know more and to know more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a rabbit hole. The rabbit hole starts on 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
When I found 4chan... Yeah, I mean, like, huh? What's this? That is what opened the path.
Gotcha. That's interesting. And
this 4chan is an anonymous message board.
Yeah.
So people say whatever the fuck they want. That's the first thing I found was an anarchist cookbook. That was the first thing I found. So I learned how to make explosives and do all types of this fucking crazy shit. So it went right along. So, you know, I was dangerous right off the gate, man. I knew how to make C4. You know what I'm saying? I had the Jolly Rogers Anarchist Cookbook, man. That was one of the first books I read. And then I kept downloading the new versions and shit, right? And then I read the 48 Laws of Power. So I know how to manipulate people.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't read it all the way. I've only read
You need to read it. You need to read it and apply it. You need to read it and apply it. And then from there, I read magic books. And I learned how magic works. And I learned how the energy of the universe works. And I read the laws of attraction. Mm-hmm. And the, Sun Tzu books. The art of seduction, the art of war. So I wanted to create a living... machine.
Mm-hmm.
I have all the information. I have all the knowledge. I have everything that I need to know from the past, from history, from different segments of reality, from different sections of industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's turned into where, you know, I'm like a fucking walking Wikipedia, man. I know everything. Yeah. I help everybody. I pull up at people's houses and end up being like a counselor that sits there. Here, let me help you with your problem. Okay, now let me help you with your problem. Okay, now let me help you with your problem. But here's the thing, man. This is what people don't realize. I've been doing that since I was a teenager. I used to go to fucking parties in Kansas, and I used to pull up at parties, and they used to call me Professor Knox. And I used to have all the females from the party sitting in a circle around me while all the dudes was mad as hell sitting over on the sideline. And every single female would sit there and ask me for my opinion. What should I do about this? Is my boyfriend cheating on me? Is this happening? And then I got to fuck him. So it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. That's fucking awesome. That's true what they say, right? Knowledge is power. Knowledge will get you where you need to get.
Now, knowledge is power. If it wasn't for knowledge and charisma, then I would have probably been, you know what I mean? Like these, what do they call intels? I would have probably been one of these intels, but I had too much knowledge and charisma. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, I'm not finna. Y'all are, what? Nah, bro, I need me a girl constantly, consistently.
Yeah. And did that thirst for knowledge apply to when you went into martial arts?
Yes.
Because I know you went into martial arts, right?
I exceeded so fast. You know what I mean? I learned everything so fast. I just went through the ranks and went through the sashes. Sifu Joe Hutchins told me I'm the best student he's ever had. You know, I'm very studious. I'm very fast. And I'm very forceful. And I'm very fierce. And I learned everything and was able to perfectly apply it almost instantly. So, you know, with the martial arts, it was just – I soaked it in. You know what I mean? And then – even with the stamina, it was like when I first started, hitting a bag for a minute straight, it was hurt. It hurt my gut. It was painful. It was difficult to do. It was hard to breathe. I felt like after 1 minute of hitting the bag, I felt like I was suffocating, and it was really difficult to get my breath back. Fast forward to when I did my last test for my 12th rank. And it should be a black sash, but there was some technical things, so I got to go back and get the black sash. But I know everything from the black sash to go back and get it. But when I did the black sash, I had to fight 5 people, hit the punching bag for – no, wait. I had to hit the punching bag for 5 minutes and then fight 5 people and then hit the punching bag for another 2 minutes.
Damn.
So I learned that level of stamina – very quickly, within a 6-month period, I went from being out of breath within a minute hitting the punching bag to literally, you don't know how tiring it is to hit a punching bag for 5 minutes and then turn around and fight 5 black belts.
Shit. Yeah. I mean, I've hit a punching bag at most a minute, and it's exhausting.
That's what I'm saying. But as you do martial arts, you learn the stamina. That you know what I mean? You learn the ability to ignore the stomach pain and the breathing problem. You learn to slow down your breathing so that you're not hyperventilating. And so instead of breathing fast, you're actually breathing slow while you're doing the activity. And you learn to pace yourself comfortably and, you know, not gas out. But if you want to get the rank that I have, you have to hit the punching bag for 5 minutes, fight 5 black belt people, not get your ass beat, and then hit the punching bag for 2 minutes.
Dude, so insane.
When people try to push me over or be aggressive or, you know, even disrespect me, like, I'm a badass, bro. I will fuck you up, like, for real.
That's no cap. I had to fight
5 black belts to get my current rank. You ain't shit. And I beat my brother's ass. I don't got no mercy for you.
Yeah. Damn.
I'm dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, in real life. Man. You know what I'm saying? Like, in real life, bro.
Man, that's what you need to make it in this world, right? And to make it in this industry.
I'm by myself, man. Ain't nobody got my back. You know what I'm saying? Like if I go out and I go with my people, sure. But in everyday, day-to-day life, man, I'm not going to be one of these rappers that get smoked and they didn't have a gun. I'm smoking motherfuckers. I'm not going, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, Like these rappers, they act hard and they act gangster, and every time they get killed, they ain't got no motherfucking gun on them. And it don't make no motherfucking sense, because I ain't never leaving my house without my motherfucking pistol. I don't care where the fuck I'm at. You pull a gun on me, I'm shooting your bitch ass. I ain't going.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I feel that, because I do the same thing, man. I carry my 9mm everywhere I go.
Everywhere, bro. Motherfuckers ain't playing. Listen, if you don't have a gun, you slipping, because you're one of the only ones without a gun. Everybody got a gun. If you don't got a fucking gun, you bugging, man. Like, it's
especially nowadays, here. Like the way the world has shifted. You know, the way just everything is, man, you're not safe anywhere, even with your own people sometimes.
Well, if you're blessed and highly favored, you're safe everywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? If you're blessed and you're highly favored, you're safe everywhere if you stay on your path.
Yeah.
You get off your path, this dangerous motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, quick question. Were you always religious, or was it something that you came into?
My religion is a very confusing religion. I am a Rosicrucian Gnostic Christian. I am not a standard King James Version Christian. However, my religion started very young. My parents brought me to a Baptist church and had me baptized. And I have always been a Christian. I've always had the Spirit of God within me.
Okay.
But I just believe in a different origin story.
And I've heard it in other interviews you've done where you've talked about how there's other books. And I love that you say that, because me personally, I grew up in a very Roman Catholic household, right? And I believe in God. I believe in the religion. I have a lot of questions about things within the religion, right? Like, I question a lot of things just because of the way I grew up and the way that I've also had a thirst for knowledge, right? I want to know as much as I can. So,
the Holy Roman Empire, man, there's a lot to question.
There is a lot to question.
The most evil organization in the entire history of the planet.
Yep. And I believe that. I mean, you just look at the Crusades, look at things before the Crusades, and it's just unbelievable. And things up until the modern day, right? With the whole.
They threw all my ancestors in a fire, so I don't like them. I got smoke.
Oh, shit.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, y'all motherfuckers talking about, well, it was the past, and oh, we're supposed to be forgiving. Nah, fuck that shit. Y'all threw my peoples in the fire. It's smoke forever. Fuck y'all.
Yeah.
Not you.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
And the bishops and the Catholics. And,
because like I said,
y'all motherfucking, they be fucking kids anyway. Weird ass motherfucker.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff within the religion. And that's why, like, I wanted to ask you, right? Because, like I said, I grew up in such a religious household, but I had a lot of questions and pushback against the Roman Catholic Church itself. And I've heard you talk about, like, these different books. I believe I heard you talk about something about Adam being Adam and Eve dying multiple times.
Yeah, the Book of Adam.
Yeah. And I found that so interesting. And I've been trying to find that book online because I really want to read it and like, get
it actually. It actually gave us our age. It told us when we're going to die. It said 7,000 years. So really? we got about like, I don't know, 1,500 years left or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave us our age. It said you will not die for 7,000 years.
Yeah.
That's what he told Adam. Right? And that's the whole point of AD is to separate us from the knowledge of how long we've been here.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. I'm gonna have to get that book. I gotta read it.
You see what I'm saying? It was like the devil kept taking different forms to be able to tempt Adam and Eve into positions where they would die, and then God would keep bringing them back to life and saying, you know, not it's not your time. You're not gonna die yet. Mm-hmm. Like one of the examples, the prominent example, is that the devil did the same thing that he did with Jesus to Adam, and he led him up to a mountain. And he said, all of this can be yours if you bow down and worship me.
Mm-hmm.
And as Adam was looking, he pushed him off the motherfucking cliff because he really just hated him. He didn't want him to worship him. He wanted him to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pushed him off the cliff. Adam hit the ground, died. God came. Hop back up, man. It's not your time yet.
Yeah. Damn, that's so interesting. I'm going to get that book. I got to get that book. I just want
it is, man. It's a very Very interesting. And it's not a book, it's a series of books. It's called the Nag Hammadi Library. And so you can just go on the internet and you can read it for free. You just look up the Nag Hammadi Library and the Dead Sea Scrolls. You got the Book of Adam, you got the Book of Thomas, you know what I mean? It's like it's all the books of the Bible that were deleted by Constantine.
Okay, like the Book of Enoch as well, and then okay. I'm gonna look that up. I gotta read that. That way next time I talk to you.
Yeah, I think the Book of Enoch is in the Nag Hammadi Library.
It should be. It was pulled by Constantine.
Yeah.
I gotta read some of those books. That way we can have some conversations about that.
But I think the Book of Enoch is a different religion, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that Mormon?
I don't think so. I believe.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's a whole different book. Yeah. So the Book of Enoch is Enoch's story of going to heaven. That's a very important book in the Nag Hammadi Library. Yep.
Yeah. I'm gonna read some of these books. That way we can talk about it next time. I'll link up with you.
Oh yeah, man. Check them out. You know what I'm saying? And then, like I said, the actual history is crazy, man. My ancestors. The first Gnostics got cooked. They got thrown in the motherfucking fire by the Catholics.
That's crazy.
And they was like peacefully went into the fire, man. Like just walk right into the fire. Like if you say so, we gotta die. They had some bitch ass fucking monks chat. Oh, like what the fuck, man? Y'all killing motherfuckers on a fire and chanting, bro. That was magic. That was rituals. That was satanic sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that, man. I always joke with my wife about that because, like, you know, you go to mass and you just kind of look at it and you read about like pagan rituals and stuff, and this is the same exact shit.
Listen, that's magic. Liturgies are Latin. Latin is magic.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, shit, dope, man. Well, thank you for coming on the show, dude. I really appreciate our conversation. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like our listeners are going to learn a lot about who Noxbon is.
Fun.
And how you got here.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great story, man. I love that you were able to break it down for us and kind of tell us how you got in the game and how Next Level became a thing. That was really cool. I appreciate
it. Yeah, like I said, it was very organic. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was very... Take the next step. What do we do next? So, you know, now we're at the point where we're building a radio syndication network and taking over radio.
Yeah. No, that's fucking dope. And it was an amazing conversation. Your mission is amazing. We know it's destiny. We know Nox Bond is going to do it. Like, it's your path. It's your walk. Mm-hmm. You got it. I can't wait to see it all happen and come into fruition. I hope we get to stay linked up and, you know, have more chats like this later down the road.
On Next Level, so you already know. You already know what it is. Sir. You're Next Level. It's Next Level till the dirt settle. You know what I'm saying? Sir. Like, so we locked in, bro.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate you again for coming on. Yep. Thank you.
I'll always come back, bro. When I got motherfucking, you know, $50,000 a show, I'm still going to make time. I'm going to pop in. I'm going to be like, yo.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate it. I really appreciate, like, you have no idea how much I appreciate you coming on because I know you're a super busy guy. Like, I know
we all got to win, man. I'm a busy guy, but I'm here for everybody, man. I'm not here for myself. So it's like, if me being on your podcast or your platform helps you develop a fan base, that's just one of the privileges of being on Next Level. That's what we're here for. I was on the phone with a DJ today, and he was on another coalition, and he quit that coalition. And the reason he quit that coalition, he told me on the phone, is because he said, man, Nox, you're the only one who does stuff for us, man. You're the only one who puts us on the radio. I've been with these guys 10 years. Ain't nobody ever put me on no radio. Ain't nobody ever, like put me in a room with 100 DJs to be able to communicate with other DJs and build on my own. Ain't nobody provided me with artists that I'm going to get a plaque because I personally am involved with the artist. None of that. I'm doing that for my DJs. I'm doing that for every DJ. I'm at the point right now where I'm training children and teenagers to be the next generation so that 10 years from now, the people who are in place are all Next Level, and they've already all been Next Level for 10 years because they was Next Level since they was kids. You know what I mean? So
no, that's
getting crazy, man. It's getting wild. Next level to the dirt side of real life and no life. Y'all follow me on social media, Knoxbond, KnoxbondWorld.com. I am here. I am the king. I have royal blood. Everybody calls me boss, and I call no man boss.
Yes, sir. Word up. Appreciate you, man. This has been a great podcast. Thank you, Knoxbond, Mr. Boss Man, the king of the music game. I appreciate you. Our fans appreciate you. This has been the Weekly D Podcast. I'm Danny G. That was Knoxbond. Peace.
Peace. All right, much love, my guy.